You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 29. This is Atheistically Speaking, and I'm Thomas Smith. All right, well, last week we had Greta on, and of course, Thursday was the episode everyone is buzzing about. I have gotten an enormous amount of reaction to that, and so I'll have to say that that's what I'm going to be talking about in today's commentary. And then also, I'm finally getting to a debate I had. It's sort of, the timing's a little interesting because there's so much else going on that I probably should be talking about more so, you know, the Greta thing and all that, and feminism and all that. But this debate's been sitting around for a while. I think it was good. I'm interested to see what you guys think about it. And so we're going to be airing that this week, in addition to a few other things. So let me think. Any other news? As usual, check out all the thanks for the followers on Twitter. I've gotten quite a few new ones. Keep that up. That's at Speak Atheism. I want to get to where I'm in some sort of fraction of my listening audience because it's nothing. It's like no percentage of you guys somehow. I don't know what that's about exactly. But again, that helps you because it'll help me book guests for the show when I have a more legitimate looking Twitter account. So, and then also, the normal things the premium feed, I got that all set up. So if anyone was holding out on the Patreon because they don't like how the bonus content is, because actually I heard that from several people, I went to great effort to design a premium podcast feed that's password protected. I can monitor it. So it's everybody has a unique password username who signs up. And so it's not going to be abused. I can tell how many downloads it gets. I can tell, you know, who's downloading it and that kind of thing. It's just like a normal podcast. You can get those bonus episodes on, unfortunately, not the podcast app for iTunes because they ruined that with the last OS update, but everything but that pretty much. So check that out if you were holding out for that reason. All right. Let's enough of all this. Let's get to some commentary. So as I said, an incredible amount of reaction to Thursday's episode with Greta, which just goes to show how contentious this whole thing is. The first thing I want to say is that one thing I didn't get was anyone yelling at me or insulting Greta or anything disrespectful, which makes me very happy about my listener base. Of course, I had plenty of people who disagreed with her on certain things, but they did so in a rational way. It makes me feel really good about the show that I'm building. I think that I'm attracting, maybe I'm flattering myself, but I think I'm attracting thoughtful, rational thinkers, you know, thoughtful thinkers. That's a excellent turn of phrase. I should write this stuff down. But I think I'm attracting thoughtful, sort of open-minded listeners. And again, they may have disagreed, but they did so, they explained it, you know, and that's what I want. Also, several people who wrote in to me said that they had given up talking about the issue or trying to follow it because they had been so turned off by the extremism on either side. This is exactly what I wanted to do. I really want to engage all those people who are sort of maybe in the middle or a bit to one side or the other, but who aren't exactly extremists, who just have been too afraid to really speak up because of how reactionary everyone is. So now I'm going to do my best to explore the range of responses I got. I got too many to read, you know, of course. Thanks for every single one of them. I read them all. I don't mean too many for me to read. I mean too many to read aloud here. But I sort of took them all in, and I'm going to try to sum them up a little bit or at least react to them. So what I have to say is, unfortunately, nearly every single one mentioned the elevator incident. I refuse to call it elevator gate because of the convention of attaching gate to every scandal is about the most worn out, uncreative crap journalism there is. I really do think, as a side note, I think that young people who read about Watergate in the future will think it was a controversy involving water. Like, I really think they will think that. But anyway, so speaking of worn out things, the elevator incident has been beaten to a pulp. Of course, it's been, a long time and people still talk about it. I really didn't want to get into it, but I don't really think I have a choice because seriously, every single response almost mentioned it in some way. So here it comes. Are you ready for it? I'm going to have to talk briefly about the elevator incident. All right. I believe that a guy has every right to ask a girl to grab some coffee and that a girl has every right to tell guys they shouldn't do that and to not suffer years of online harassment for it. Explosion of people, both sides wanting to, tear me down, I'm sure. No, I don't know. I do. This is what I think. I personally really like Rebecca Watson. And if she doesn't like being asked for coffee really late near or in an elevator or whatever it was, she has every right to express that. I think what happened was that everyone brought so much other baggage to this incident. It sounds like what the guy did made Rebecca feel uncomfortable. So maybe guys should consider that going forward. But I also think you need to look at the intent of the guy. He obviously had no intention of physically harming her, and also had he known she would shut him down and then use it as an example of what not to do, I'm sure he wouldn't have done it. I'm sure he regrets having done it. So he wasn't trying to make some statement for all men, for men's rights by what he did. He just didn't know. I mean, it seems as though he made a bad social judgment call with this particular girl. Maybe another girl would have been fine with it. Maybe not. I don't know. It seems as though, in any case, the evidence is quite clear that it was a bad judgment call in this case. And that's it. It seems no different to me than any other social misstep someone might take. I mean, in some ways, it's maybe at work. Someone says something weird and, something awkward, and you might talk about it to someone else behind their back. It happens every day. It's that kind of thing to me. That's about the level of importance this should have. Oh, and like I said, it seems as though following a girl to an elevator can make that girl uncomfortable sometimes. So maybe, every guy, take that into account. Maybe try a different demeanor, try to say something. I mean, if the guy had not made her feel uncomfortable, then it wouldn't have happened. She wouldn't have brought it up. So maybe say something a little earlier to indicate that, your intentions or I don't know, something. Just in some way, make a girl, if you're going to do this, which maybe you should just avoid it altogether because it sounds like it could be a bad idea in terms of following someone to an elevator. but if you are, maybe try something to make sure your intentions are clear and that you're friendly and that the girl doesn't feel uncomfortable. I don't know. Seems reasonable to me. Now, I believe what happened, and I can't believe I'm talking about this from 3 years ago. But I believe what happened is that, and I'm guilty of this too, when guys first hear the story, they feel this almost physical reaction to it. It feels incredibly threatening as a guy. All right, I get to speak for a group. Finally, ooh, as a white male, I get to not really be allowed, I get to speak for a group that I probably shouldn't speak for. But as a guy, it can feel threatening, to have someone, to be told that you can't approach a girl in a certain way. I think there's a lot of shame already built into sex in our society, and I think it can be really intimidating as a guy, especially one with any insecurity, which I have a lot of, to talk to women in some ways. I've found my way around it, but I can imagine people who are more insecure than I am, and it's intimidating. So I think this insecurity was really just harpooned directly in its little insecurity heart. By this whole event. And the reaction very clearly seems to be a result of that to me. I get it. When I first heard it, it did sound kind of ridiculous to me. It sounds like, well, what's the big deal? I don't understand. But what I was far more horrified by is the abuse Rebecca has had to endure for years. I would really encourage everyone who disagrees with her handling of that incident to just take a step back and think, what is the bigger injustice and what is the bigger problem here? One girl expressing her feeling of discomfort, of sort of social discomfort, maybe a little physical discomfort too, about the way she was hit on. You know, maybe she felt a little danger. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what she felt. But one girl expressing her feelings in this case. Or some way too large number of males harassing her nonstop about it and still dwelling on it to the point where somehow I'm talking about it right now. I don't know how that happened. But somehow I'm having to talk about this one stupid event. And I apologize. I really do. I really apologize for having to talk about this. I was trying to avoid it in every way I could. I just don't think I can. So let's hope. It's been 3 years, I think. It feels like more, actually, but I don't know. I wasn't really paying attention back then. So, but anyway, let's hope this will be the last you and I ever have to talk about it, but I doubt it. But moving on to the topic of online bullying in general. Many listeners pointed out that online bullying is also, I think I said bowling. Online bowling is a big problem. No. Online bullying is also a big problem outside of the atheism community. And I actually mentioned this. I didn't dwell on it, but I mentioned it, that it's been a problem since long before atheists, female atheists, were being abused online. I think. I don't have, it's definitely a problem elsewhere. This is absolutely true. You know, women everywhere, it's a huge problem. But when I say everywhere, I mean online in many different spheres of, you know, society, online society and all that. And before you say, yes, it's, you know, men have problems with it too. I get it. Before you say it, I get it, but just not nearly as often. And the bullies are overwhelmingly male, overwhelmingly white male, which is, it's really odd. But anyway, it seems like it would be a little unfair to say that misogyny within atheism is more of a problem than with any other community. So I'm backing you guys up, those who said this in messages to me. I agree that I don't think it's more of a problem with atheism. It seems to me, and unless I see some numbers that say otherwise, let me know if you have those numbers. It just seems like a problem our society faces. And it's in all parts of our society. However, that's no reason to ignore it within atheism, and it's no reason to try to shut women down who are trying to speak up about it. It's also something that one would have assumed and hoped was based in religion, but it turns out that's not the case. And I think that's another element of this. I think we expect better from atheists, and we should. We expect them to be reasonable, more reasonable. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be true in this online bullying. Some people have mentioned that they think the numbers are scary, not the numbers, but the impression of how many, how much online abuse there is. They think that's skewed. I'm just not interested in going down that road. I mean, I'm not interested in telling women, oh, don't worry about these rape and death threats you're getting. Don't, you know, that's just a few people. Don't worry. You know, it's no, I mean, there shouldn't be any. So anyway, I spent a good deal of time backing up Greta and Rebecca Watson here, and I think that's because most of the messages I got were from people who disagreed with them on some level, but they didn't feel comfortable saying it anywhere else. So, and I understand that's, I did get, definitely got messages also in support of everything Greta said, and that's great. But I think I maybe got more from the other side because I was sort of, since I had Greta on, it was as though I was endorsing that side more, and I did, you know, I endorsed her side a bit more, but I didn't go into specifics on a lot of these issues, which I'm trying to do so now. So anyway, since I've been backing, you know, feminist atheists up for a while, let me take a second to back the other guys up, and I don't mean bullies, I mean the people kind of in the middle here who I've heard from, who have some concerns about the atheism feminism thing. I think the feminist movement in atheism could be helped by attempting to appeal a bit more to those of you who fall somewhere in the middle. Those of us, I'll say those of us who fall somewhere in the middle. Lots of you said you fear to even bring up legitimate questions in forums or elsewhere online for fear of being banned and treated instantly as an other. I really don't think this is a good thing. But I also don't think it delegitimizes feminism as a whole. So I would encourage women in these movements or men who are whoever's, I guess, the mods, the mods of the forums, do your best to be patient with those who are making good faith efforts. I understand it's difficult because you get so many trolls and, you know, you're quick to ban them. You know, you're quick to that ban button. I get it. Do your best though. Try to open the net a little bit, because I think we need to. I think the reason I'm doing this is I think the way I can help is to provide a place where everyone can feel comfortable discussing it. And this is not to say that I'm going to take one side or the other. I think I'm carving out the side I'm taking, but I, no matter what side I carve out, as long as someone is not abusing women online or anyone, as long as someone is not bullying anyone online, those are the only people who I'm shutting out for this conversation. Well, not exactly shutting out, because I'll say, don't do it. That's the conversation. Don't do it. That's it. Anything else, if you want to express a view that, oh, I don't think there's that many bullies, I think it's, you know, not representative, that's fine. I'm not going to shut you out of the conversation. I'm going to say that I don't exactly agree, but that's what I want to do here. And that's what I feel like I can maybe do to help the movement and to help, you know, sort of the plight of women in atheism a little bit. I really want to help. And I think the best way is to use the fact that I'm not going to be threatened by a bunch of misogynists, I don't believe. Who knows? But I'm not going to be facing threats, life, you know, death threats, rape threats. I don't think I'll be facing that. So I think I'm in a position to where I can be more sympathetic and not so reactionary. And so that's what I'd say. The only caveat I would give is, no matter what level of disagreement you have with Watson or whoever it is, don't be a bully apologist. Make it clear constantly that you don't support that. Maybe even if you aren't 100% on board with the feminist movement, I get it. Or, you know, 50% on board, whatever it is. Don't be a shield for the bullies. Don't shield them. Don't apologize for them. The only way we are ever going to be able to get rid of this phenomenon, outside of maybe eliminating online privacy, which seems like sometimes it might be a good idea, but I'm sure it has a lot more problems, is to just constantly make these bullies feel unwelcome everywhere online. It's probably an impossible task, because it's so easy to be a troll. It takes no effort. And apparently some people get something out of that. I find it sickens me. I wouldn't, not so much that, it's just, what a waste of time. Don't you have anything better to do? I mean, what are you doing? Even if you're joking and you think you're funny, even if you're, because there are a lot of those kind of trolls who are, you know, trolling people that they actually kind of agree with or something. Like, what are you doing? Just get a hobby, read a book, you know, go on a, you know, play a sport, do something. What are you doing? I don't even know. Play a video game. You know what? I don't get it. Again, those trolls are the only people I have no patience for. Everyone else, you're welcome. Trolls, what are you doing? Anyway, now I just want to say, so yes, if, no matter what your level of disagreement with feminism, just don't apologize for trolls. Just don't do it. Don't say, oh yeah, well, you know, there's some bullying, but did you see that, you know, this feminist did that? It's like, no, don't do that. At least make clear first, I don't support bullying at all. I think it's sickening. However, I just, you know, maybe the one thing, don't use the however, say, but I don't know. I know it's insane that how careful we have to be. And that is kind of what I want to fight against a little bit. So hopefully I made that clear here on my show and on my Facebook page and to my email where I got all these comments. Feel free, express yourself, express your feelings. I got a lot of really candid responses. I appreciate them. But just don't be a bully apologist. That's it. So there are a couple things also that I don't know that I agree with Greta about. She was very, very, very scathing of Richard Dawkins, more than I was ready for, I think, because I just talked about, I was pretty much just making reference to the Watson thing. But she said, you know, that he's been racist and sexist and classist. And, I don't know. I mean, I would like someone to point me to these examples, if you don't mind. And let me make clear, I'm not saying that these examples for certain don't exist. I'm not assuming anything. I, you know, I learned a long time ago with how many, major celebrities, politicians, with how many people just turn out to be not what you think they are. It can happen. I get it. I'm not putting blind faith in Richard Dawkins. I'm simply looking at what he said. And yes, he clearly didn't have sympathy for Rebecca Watson's elevator thing. I understand that. If you are mad at him for that, I understand it. If you want to say he's just wrong, I get it. I think he was probably wrong in how he handled it. I imagine that it had to do with, I don't know. He might just be wrong. I'm not, you know, and if he's wrong, I'm not going to apologize. But he speaks up for women in many other respects, though. So does that truly count for nothing? I don't know. I mean, I don't think it should count for nothing. I think that we ought to be able to say, okay, Richard Dawkins, he doesn't seem to get this one particular aspect of feminism. He doesn't understand how Rebecca Watson might have felt in that situation. Or maybe the context he received the information in, it just didn't seem like a big deal to him. I mean, I know he compared it to the plight of Muslim women in Islam-dominated countries, and of course it pales in comparison to that. Of course it does. So I don't know. I mean, but it's fine. If you want to say he's wrong, fine. But I think to say that he's some raging sexist, I just don't know about that. I would like, if you have further proof, please give it to me. Send it to me. It seems to me like this is sort of another instance of the incredible polarization that happens. Once he's been labeled as an other, then all these things are assumed about him. You know, has he assaulted someone that I missed? Did he discriminate against someone because of their race or gender? I mean, there's nothing that I've found, but again, I'm completely open to evidence. I really am. So don't be reactionary toward me saying this. And as far as racism, I don't even know what that charge is about unless it has to do with Islam. And if this is my ignorance, again, give me the evidence. Go ahead. I'm happy to look at it. I don't think I want to tackle the issue of hating Islam, being racist or not. I don't think I want to tackle that right now since this has already been the longest commentary in history. But that last episode was the most feedback I've ever gotten by a wide margin. So that's why it's so long. I hope you enjoyed these thoughts. I hope they made you think. Maybe, hopefully, who knows. So I don't think this topic will ever fully be covered, but I just hope I've done a decent job starting the conversation, making this an open place to have the discussion, and I will look forward to more reaction from you guys in the future. Thanks for listening. Right, so now, as promised, the first debate with a very thoughtful Christian. I know some of you think that's an oxymoron, but you're an oxymoron. No, he's a thoughtful guy. It was a good talk. Ultimately, I obviously disagree. And keep in mind, I was really trying my hardest to engage him in a way that maybe he'd respond to. You know, it's very difficult to talk people out of Christianity, just as he would say, it would be difficult to talk me into it. But so there may be things that you think I should have said, or obvious arguments that are, you know, statements I should have made that I didn't, because I know he's heard all the rhetoric. I was trying as hard as I could to deal with the conversation that he was giving to me, and to try to engage it in a way that wouldn't instantly alienate me to him. So who knows if I did a good job of that. I think it's time for you all to judge for yourselves. So here it is. With us today is Elijah. Would you like me to give your full name, or Elijah is fine?
Yeah, either way, it's good. Actually, I think my last name's plastered all over the place anyway.
Oh, okay. And since you've agreed to join, feel free to promote anything you'd like. If it's your social media or whatever it is.
You mean right now?
Yeah, go ahead. Elijah, you can find just so people can find you before we get started here.
All right. Yeah. My name's Elijah. I go by the Twitter handle Elijah T. I have another I in my name. It's Elijah T. And I have two blogs that I'm currently, I'm contributing to one and I'm maintaining the other. The one that I'm contributing to is hashtagapologetics.wordpress.com. That's where I do a lot of like the, any, conversation I find inspiration to do some kind of writing on. It's where I do it in the apologetics realm. And then I have my other blog, which is thinklearnlive.wordpress.com. That's where I kind of dedicate that to more of the philosophical and the biological conversations. A lot of times in like bioethics and things like that. And so that's pretty much the only place that you can really find me unless you want to be my friend on Facebook.
No one wants that. No, I'm just kidding.
No one.
Yeah. And so if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to, at least for the listeners and for myself, to sort of get a baseline, you know, overview of your views so that they know, you know, you're not a, whether or not you're young earth or whether or not, whatever it is, you don't have to go into too much detail if you don't want, but just to get a sense that we know kind of we're on the same page.
Okay. Well, I guess I would fall largely on like the evangelical side of Christianity. I'm not a young earth creationist. I don't know how much I go to a Baptist church, but we don't really like the label because Westboro has kind of tainted it. other than that, I pretty much fit broadly into the kind of the understood views that Christians have, but not necessarily the justifications that other Christians tend to give. My brother-in-law and I are actually thinking about starting a podcast, and we're running through names right now because we want to kind of put forth somewhat of a pointed name so that people know what we're about, and we're kind of dancing back and forth between something like unconventional Christianity or, progressive or prog Christianity, but progressive comes with liberal connotations and we're not liberal Christians. So I guess that's where I would fall is in on the, what would be considered the conservative evangelical side of things, but not for, well, at least what I don't think are stupid reasons.
Okay. Yeah. And let me just take a minute to say thanks a lot for agreeing to come on. It's kind of hard to find. I've only been trying for a few weeks, but it's kind of hard to find people willing to come on and defend their views. Who knows? Maybe I'm just not looking the right places, but I feel like a lot of people shy away from it. I don't know why that is exactly.
I think a lot of times it's easier to do it behind a keyboard than it is actually talking about it.
Sure. And I'll also say that I've been reading a little bit of what Elijah's written. I encourage you to check out his blog. Very good writer, very good writing. A lot of it, even though I, of course, have a different worldview, a lot of it, I agree with a lot of it. So it's maybe I picked a bad person to try a debate because he seemed to be a pretty thoughtful, very, very sharp, intelligent guy. So we'll see how this goes. And I've emphasized in previous episodes, I'll just do a short version right now. I just want to give this a try. I want to see how debating, casually kind of discussion style debating goes between two people. And, I'm very curious to see, maybe Elijah's going to mop the floor with me and then I can, can kind of look at it and analyze it and see what happens. So, I guess we'll go ahead and try to give it a try. So, I sort of left it open for you to, I didn't define kind of the question or the specific points. I'd like to approach it since you are sort of evangelical, you said, as what would you like to try to get as a non-believer? What would you try to like to get me to believe?
Well, if we're going to go based on where I came from, I kind of grew up in a moderately Christian home. My parents probably wouldn't like that I called it that. But by the time I started my later years in high school and early college years, I was, for lack of a better word, an agnostic, but not because I actually formally called myself an agnostic, but just because I didn't really care. And so I guess I was more apathetic than anything else. But what my journey to where I am now started off with reasons to believe in God. And then once I had those, at least the philosophical barriers put down so that I could believe in God, I began to explore the reasons to believe in God. And then from there was, a broad either deism or theism. And from there, I actually started to explore, not as much as I probably would have had I known this is what I was doing, but I did start to explore different religions. I looked briefly into Islam, a little bit of Buddhism, not very much, but a little bit of Buddhism, and then Christianity because it was just kind of all in the same basket for me. And so what I ended up doing was basically going from I guess, you know, if you define atheism as lack of belief in God, whatever, however you want to go with that, that's pretty much where I was. And then I started by kind of believing in God, and then it went eventually to Christian theism. So if we were to go that same route, if I'm talking to an atheist, whether or not, however you feel like defining that, I would probably end up starting off right off at
Let me just stop real quick. Would you prefer, do you want me to define my views right now, or do you care? Do you want to just start from assuming I'm an atheist of whatever that means to you?
I think you can feel free to define however you want to define atheism. But I think in either way, the question, does God exist? Unless you say yes, I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay.
So whether or not, you know, that's, even if you were to ask me 7 or 8 years ago, do you believe in God? I probably would have been, no, probably not. And I would have been like, well, here are some reasons to believe in God.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely, the answer to that question would be no, I don't believe in God. So it seems as though we could start there.
Do you, well, just to kind of, you know, ask about your particular sure. brand of atheism. Are you a lack of belief atheist, or are you I believe that there is no God atheist?
I think that there's, of course, a philosophical level at which we can never say for certain. But I think for all intents and purposes of regular everyday life, we can know with about as much certainty as we know most things that there's no God. Okay. So I might go a little further. But if someone were to say they were a deist and it had almost no effect on their life, but they do just kind of want, they just feel a belief in a greater being, I wouldn't argue, just to give you an indication of my temperament, I suppose, I wouldn't really argue with them too much. I mean, I'd say, well, I don't have that belief, but of course it's possible.
Right.
And okay. I would say just real quickly, I was raised, going to church. I was sounds like maybe similar to you. And for a while, I basically tried as hard as I could to be a deist because I really wanted there to be a God. And I just, over the course of maybe 5 years, I would try it and try it and try it because my family was religious and I wanted it to be true. And I just knew it wasn't. I mean, I eventually, no matter the arguments I would try to make to myself, I just wasn't convincing myself. So that's a little of my background.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I was actually probably a couple of weeks ago, I was on Chris Webb's. I don't know if you know him. He's another atheist podcaster. He has a C Webb Sunday School, I think.
I've heard of it, but I haven't listened to it.
Okay, yeah. For the most part, it seems like he has a very just purely like atheism and atheistic or naturalistic worldview kind of discussions. But I was on there and the question that he asked was, what would it take for you to change your belief in God? And I had 15 minutes, according to him, to just discuss why I believe in God and what would it take for me to change my belief. I actually probably should have put a blog post up about this so that I could have had all of my points down, but I have them written down, and I kind of went through all the reasons that compelled me to embrace Christian theism. And I think there was probably like 10 things. And after that, I was like, if you want to dismantle Christianity, you got to first start off with, you know, the resurrection of Christ, dismantle that, and then go through the Bible, dismantle that. And so I have, you know, just like any other person with a moderately thoughtful worldview, there's a lot of different things that go into building it up. And so in order to be able to build it, you know, to break it down, you got to have, it's got to be systematic. You can't just, you know, unless of course, all of a sudden I'm no longer convinced that God exists, then it pretty much takes out the, you know, the base underneath everything that I believe. And then, you know,
well, I would say that it would be tough for me to, I don't really have all that much interest in dismantling the Bible. Because I think similarly to what you just said, I think it takes a lot of work before you could get to the point of even accepting that. Just right. Like if someone came to you with a completely different book, you know, of which there are tons, and a completely sure. different set of dogma and beliefs and all that, if they said, hey, you need to dismantle all this first before you can convince me of your belief, you know, it's like, well, why do I need to read all this before we're even to the point of, you know, talking about it? So I would say that I'm not, I'll try if you want, but I'm not an expert on the Bible, and I wouldn't really be too interested in trying to dismantle belief from a biblical perspective.
No, that's, I guess, like, maybe I was communicating a little bit wrong, but that's not really what I was planning.
Oh, okay.
On. Sure. I'm just making the point that if somebody has a worldview that they've thought about, it's much more difficult than I think a lot of people will assume, whether or not it's a naturalistic worldview, which is, you know, one of the atheistic.
So you were just saying, in terms of answering the question, what would make you not believe, you're saying right. It's more detailed than just one thing, which, yeah, I accept that. That's
yeah. Fair. Okay, and so then the points that I went through, I'm not going to go through all of them here, but there was, you know, I'm sure you and many of your listeners have probably heard about the different cosmological arguments. Mm-hmm. Then there's the teleological argument, which has some interesting underlying things that I've kind of tried to address in some of my conversations. There are also things that make more sense on a Christian worldview than a non-Christian worldview, like our inner moral convictions. I believe that's best explained by the fact that we are made in the image of God. I think that there are a handful of things that once you kind of consider all of them together, Christian theism makes more sense than any of the other perspectives. But that just that goes to show how I kind of reasoned through it.
Okay. So what argument do you want to start with? I mean, I'm here starting from zero, you know, like what do I need to do to believe in God here?
All right. Well, let's just start at the very beginning then, right? Sure. The whole Kalam cosmological argument. Do you know about this one?
Yes.
Okay. So it's the whole premise one, the universe or everything that begins to exist has a cause. The second premise is the universe began to exist. And then third, the conclusion is that the universe has a cause. And then by looking at the qualities that the cause must have, you come up with a timeless, spaceless, immaterial, beyond the universe. So if depending on – well, actually, I bet you we can say that – modify it a little bit and say that everything that begins to exist has a cause. The natural world began to exist, and then the natural world has a cause. Then that would imply that the cause of the natural world was, in fact, outside of nature, which mm-hmm. would then be, by definition, supernatural. How do you feel about that?
Well, from the very beginning, I already don't know how exactly you would prove everything has a cause. Is there? Do you have
everything that begins to exist?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, because there's nothing that's begun to exist except the one thing we're talking about. I mean, if you bring up any real world example, like you build something, well, you didn't cause it to exist. You just simply took things that already existed and you arranged them in such a way that we identify it as an object. But we have no evidence of something that's come into existence ever, except the one thing which we're trying to argue about, which is the universe.
So are you saying like that we, both of us exist like as long as the universe has existed?
No.
Because, I mean, we began to exist at some point, right?
Yeah, but we – the term you and I, that's a – we're an aggregation of all of our – everything that makes us up. Every atom that makes us up already existed before we did. So nothing was created to create us more than it was arranged. I don't know that – and let me just say, I don't know that this point's necessarily wrong. I'm not sure I disagree with the premise. But I have thought to myself before, like, well, how would you even prove it? Because, like I said, I mean, you're talking about something that begins to exist. It has to be from nothing. Otherwise, it's just a rearrangement of things that already exist.
Right. And I think there is a good reason to think that there was, at some point, nothing. Because, well, that sounds weird to say that there was nothing because nothing doesn't exist.
Exactly.
But there, it seems to me that it makes sense to say that there was a point where nothing, no things existed because we can't have an eternally existent universe because, you know, there's a second law of thermodynamics. It says everything is breaking down. We have time that is passing by and we can't have an infinite number of prior events. And if the universe was eternal in the past, then that would mean that we would be today, we would have had to pass by an infinite number of events.
Well, I don't believe the universe is eternal, except that there are models that show that it could, you know, it could expand, contract, that kind of thing. But in terms of talking about what's outside the universe, we have no access to that information. So that could very well be eternal. Well, let me just say, in terms of the first premise, I honestly don't know how you prove that. And I just mean in logical terms, because we have no evidence of that. We only have the one instance we're talking about. Once the universe starts, everything that's been quote unquote created is just a rearrangement of atoms and particles that we already know about. So it's, I understand the logical and sort of intuitive appeal of saying everything that, you know, is created, you know, needs a cause, but we only have the one thing that we're even debating in order to produce that premise. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I wish I knew. See, I guess this is one of the benefits of having like the actual, like, you know, how some people before a debate will actually exchange their arguments or whatever.
Sure, sure.
Because I haven't studied this in a while, but
that's okay. I mean this to be very, you know, to be a very friendly kind of debate. Let's go ahead and say, I'll be curious if you come across that, send me it. But I will be entirely willing to grant premise one. I just wanted to say that because that's something I've always thought of. I don't think of that as like a knockdown argument, but I think of it as something I don't know how to prove that. Maybe someone has thought of something, like you say, maybe you've seen it. So if you happen to come across that, shoot that to me, or I can have you back to talk about it. Let's go ahead and consider premise one. I'll grant premise one then.
Just to jump back real quick, sure. If I'm remembering correctly, I believe the position that you're kind of talking about right now, where that only one thing ever began to exist and nothing else actually begins to exist.
Well, that we know of, sure. I mean,
yeah, I believe that's a position called mereological nihilism. And somebody's going to look this up while they're listening to this or something and be like, oh, he's so stupid. But I think that's what it's called. But I don't remember. But yeah, okay. Anyway, so.
Well, let me quickly clarify. I think we only have access by virtue of the sort of physical constraints of our universe. It may be that things are popping in and out of existence in whatever sort of realm, like hierarchically, is above our universe. It's hard to use spatial terms because space is a product, you know, part of the universe. But so I wouldn't say, just to make clear, I wouldn't say that I'm positing that our universe is the only thing that's ever come into existence. I'm just saying, in terms of proving that argument logically, that we only have one occurrence of this that we even know about and have access to. So that's all I'm saying. Just to clarify, I'm not trying to say that there's nothing else and our one universe popped out of nothing. So, but we'll look into that more later, and I'll grant premise one. We'll sort of assume, for the sake of continuing the argument, because it might be right that maybe there, I sort of believe you that there is somebody who's done some work on that.
Yeah.
The next premise then is that our universe
began to exist. Right.
Right.
And that's confirmed essentially by the Big Bang theory, saying that that the universe began to exist at some point in the past. Sometime, I think it was like 14.5 billion years ago.
Sounds right to me.
Somewhere around there.
I'm checking my watch. I think, yeah, it's been about 14.5.
Perfect. Yeah, right. And then we have the other reasons to believe it outside of then there's the second law of thermodynamics. I think those are the two that point to the universe beginning to exist because –
Sure.
You know,
sure. I'll grant that too. Universe began to exist. I think there are models that Sean Carroll talks about, models that suggest that it could be cyclical or could be – there are other ways of looking at it, but I think I can even go ahead and agree with you that the Big Bang, we'll go with that. It began to exist.
Okay. So far, we're just, for the sake of argument, we're going to agree with both the premises of the argument then, right?
The first two, yeah.
Right. And so the conclusion is then that the universe has a cause.
Sure. Outside of itself.
Right.
Right.
And so that the attributes of that cause would have to be timeless, spaceless, and immaterial. Are you okay with those ones?
I'm not sure that I am, because I think that we're talking about something, a realm of space we have no access to. So it could be similarly to how we could create a type of a sort of a universe in a computer, or we can create a simulation, or if not now, someday soon, we can almost create a reality which the subjects of that reality, whatever's living in the computer, has no access to us.
Right.
They could suspect that, oh, well, time is a property, you know, they could investigate into the constraints of their reality and say, oh, time is a property of this reality. Therefore, whatever created us must be timeless and material. But that's not necessarily true. It just means that however this universe, which we're granting has a cause, whatever caused it, whatever thing, I'm not going to say a who, because I think that's assuming a lot. Whatever thing caused it, I don't know why it would necessarily have to be timeless and immaterial. If and also there are cosmologists who believe that separate universes can branch off within our universe and or within a black hole or with, you know, in which case whatever caused those universes wouldn't be timeless and wouldn't be space, you know, immaterial. So what do you think about that?
Well, there are a couple of things. I guess to qualify it a little bit more, I guess timeless, spaceless, and immaterial are just kind of ways that, you know, people who talk about this kind of memorize it. But if we're talking about the Big Bang is when time, space, and matter as we know it began.
Sure.
And so whatever is out, whatever brought that thing into – whatever brought the universe into existence must be outside of those three things as we know it. So okay. While it may not necessarily be timeless, spaceless, and immaterial, they would be out – they would be –
outside of our version of that.
Right. Outside sure. of time as we know it, outside of space as we know it, outside of matter as we know it.
Okay, I can agree with that in the same way that, you know, if we – again, to go back to the example of a computer simulation, we would have the ability to kind of run back time on that. We wouldn't be bound to its time, like system time or something. So do you mean that way kind of?
Yeah, I would – I think I would have to
– loosely, I guess, loosely speaking.
Right. And there was something else that you said. The multiverse thing. I think
I don't this, think I this said actually, multi- oh, about yeah, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Branching universes.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's an. This is an interesting kind of discussion where philosophy kind of meets into science because we have some ideas as to what whether or not the multiverse exists. I haven't really studied too much about this. For me personally, but I do know that when we start talking about branching universes and things like that, that would require at least some kind of time to be able to branch. You know, so let's say we had at least one universe before us, then there would have had been time that passed, and then that's when our universe branched off. And that passage of time would have to be finite, because otherwise we would never have gotten to where we are now, because it's impossible to traverse an actual infinite number. So it would seem that even if we have the multiverse branching things like that, there'd have to be a point at which the multiverse generation beginning of all that stuff began to exist at some point, because we can't have an actually infinite number of previous multiverses.
Well, okay, if we want to launch into this now, so are you I was talking about at first just universes that could branch out from ours, but if you're talking about our universe being a part of a multiverse.
Did you want me to suggest that that our universe was the beginning of this kind of branching pattern, or are we just a link in the chain?
I don't know. I only brought that up to show that a universe could potentially have arisen from another universe, which would mean the cause wasn't timeless. That's all. That's the only reason I brought that up.
Oh, okay, I see what you mean.
If we want to talk, but I think I'm likely going to get to what you're talking about. So let's continue. I think we're kind of in agreement that I don't know that the thing has to be timeless and immaterial. I don't think I can agree with that premise at all. But I think the way you explained it, I can agree that it could be outside of our version of those things.
Right.
Okay.
And since we understand it pretty much, you know, time as we know it is pretty much the only way that we can really even think about it. This is not necessarily like I don't know, therefore God, but it almost seems like that whatever it is has to be completely outside of any kind of conception of time that we currently would apply to our universe. And in the same way, conception of matter, conception of space. That's the point that I was making about, you know,
okay.
It has to be outside of it as we know it.
Okay. I think I can agree with that. I'm not positive. We'll see. Let's go forward, I guess, and see how we do.
All right. Well, then because there has to be the past number of infinite or the infinite number of past events, we can't have an actually infinite number of past events, because that would mean that we would have traversed it to get to today. And that just doesn't make any sense. There has to be a point at which something is the what Aristotle called a prime mover, there's a couple other words that he used for it, but something that in fact began to exist. It is the cause of everything that exists, and the attributes of that cause, one of them being metaphysical necessity, which is there's two ways that things could exist. Either they were brought about by some external cause, or they exist in and of themselves. They could not not exist. And so a lot of people will say that the natural world could not not exist, but the in order to be able to have that, we'd have a trend. We'd have to travel through an infinite number of past events. So I think that the natural world is not a good metaphysically necessary object. That something that is outside of the natural world must be that metaphysically necessary thing.
I think you need to – okay. How are you defining the natural world right now?
That which contains time, space, and matter, I would imagine. Because if the cause has to be outside of it, then the – you know, we're just kind of – you know, that seems like the most – without getting too –
But will you agree that it could be whatever the cause is could be subject to its own constraints of time, space, and matter?
Sure. But then this would get into the problem of the metaphysical necessity, which is the thing that I was just talking about.
Okay. Okay. I think I'll address that in a minute. So I continue. I think I interrupted your flow there.
No, that's right. And so at this point, I think we have that the universe began to exist and that it does have a cause and that cause must be outside of time, space, and matter as we know it. It must also be in one way or another metaphysically necessary. And I think there's one other additional feature or attribute of this cause that we can kind of just discern by just thinking about it. It cannot be an impersonal cause. It has to be some kind of personal cause of some kind because
wow, okay, this is going to be a problem. what does that mean?
Okay, this is what it means. If you have an impersonal cause, let's just say gravity, we have an impersonal cause that exists for an eternity. Let's say that because this cause must be metaphysically necessary, whatever exists as the effect of the cause, if it was impersonal, would exist simultaneous with the cause. So if you have a metaphysically necessary gravity, that anything that as soon as gravity exists or as soon as the cause that causes gravity exists.
I think I understand this argument. Yeah, that's interesting.
Right. And so we have to have something that is able to exist metaphysically necessarily. So it basically exists outside of time as we know it and then cause the universe or the natural world to begin to exist at some point in the past. And the only thing that we know of actually, we know that impersonal causes don't do that. Impersonal causes don't make a choice.
Okay, so when your definition of impersonal then is I guess what it sounds like. I mean, you're assigning some sort of like decision making to it, or
yeah, agency of some kind.
Okay,
yeah. So I mean, if we're gonna, I figure you can reply to this at this point. So at this point, we seem to have a timeless. Or time is outside of time as we know it, outside of space as we know it, outside of matter as we know it, metaphysically necessary personal cause of the natural world. And this is where I would imagine that you would have to disagree.
Yes, yes. I don't know how I could possibly get to the personal point. So I see that argument. I don't think I've exactly heard it that way before. So that's interesting. But I think the way I would have to disagree with that is that something like an impersonal law like gravity, although it wouldn't be gravity, something like quantum laws that we're finding have a lot to do with probability. And so to say that our universe would just exist right when that exists, I don't think is necessarily true, because it could be something that's vastly, 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 vastly improbable, but then it can eventually at some point happen. So if we're saying – so I suppose that if I were going with all these premises, I'd say the thing that you're defining that you're going to eventually call God, I would call some set of laws that allows universes to, from time to time, depending on probability, come into existence in it.
So on this view, wouldn't – you're saying that like laws kind of exist independently of matter and space and time and all that?
Like it could be a certain
causal power.
What's that?
The laws themselves have causal power.
I think that I would have to suspect, if I'm thinking about it, that seems more probable to me than that there's somehow some personality that we have no proof of that's causing it.
Well, but this is what you just called the proof of it. This would be a good reason to think that it does exist. And I think when we think about laws as having causal power, it almost seems strange, because a lot of what we're doing is we're just kind of describing the way that the natural world works. And when it does so in a very consistent, constant way, that's what we describe as a law. The law is not something in and of itself. It's just a description.
Sure. But I think that same description could apply to whatever's outside of our universe. It could apply. We could be, I think this is where we'll probably talk about multiverse. I don't know that for sure that it exists, but I'd have an easier time believing that there's some eternal sort of realm of existence. I use that word because I don't want to use another word that has spatial and time, you know, like sounds like it's part of our space and time. So I usually say some sort of other like reality, I guess, external to our universe that we don't have access to, because that enables time and space to sometimes spontaneously come out of nothing. And so it could be it, we could very well be part of an infinite multiverse, and I don't see how I would be convinced necessary. And again, I wouldn't bet my life on any of these things, and that's sort of part of being an atheist. This is an explanation I can think of that I find just as probable, probably more probable than suspecting there's somehow a personality, because I don't see how you can have a personality without any of these constraints. I mean, isn't a personality just something that we created because, you know, we're human beings and we look for agency in things? I mean, let me ask you this. Does God have a mind? Like, is God a mind? Like, is the God that you're proving with this argument?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the whole idea that it's outside of the space-time and matter as we know it would imply that this thing exists. The conclusion is that whatever this is exists, and it is, in fact, outside of time, space, and matter. And I think any materialistic or I don't want to say atheistic because it's not really a positive worldview. It's just kind of like a no, God doesn't exist. But any kind of a materialistic or a naturalistic explanation for this doesn't make sense.
Well, I hate to do this to you guys, but I have to. I have to cut it off. We're out of time for this episode. So you're going to have to wait until Thursday for part two. Unless, of course, you visit patreon.com/atheist. Then you will have already heard this debate and you can hear Thursday's episode right after this, pretty much. It's usually out by Monday, the end of the day. You can hear Thursday's episodes by Tuesday at the latest if you're a patron. So I won't belabor that, but that's, I mean, I'm not doing this just to mess with you. I really just could not find any better way to divide up all the content for this week. I have too much, and I didn't want to put all of the debate in one episode and not have any time for any sort of reaction or, notes or anything else. It just seemed that wouldn't work. And then have another episode that was all reaction to Greta and then reaction to something else. You know, it wasn't going to work. So I'm sorry I have to split it up. But again, I'm, you know, if you care to support me and do the $1 show, you can have access to it. So otherwise, if not, I understand and I won't talk about it anymore. I will simply see you on Thursday for the conclusion of the debate. Thank you for listening.